is the Grillion Report. The unusual, weird news, anomalies, exopolitics. It's Beyond the Fringe, where conspiracy theory can become conspiracy fact. This is the Grillion Report with your host, Micah Hanks.
From hundreds of miles beneath terra firma in the depths of the hollow earth, live from the Grillion Bunker once again, you have locked in to the one and only Grillion Report. I'm your host, Micah Hanks, the mouth of the South. And as we broadcast here from our abode in the hollow realm known as the Mohorovicic Continuity, I'm joined tonight by my younger brother, my partner in crime, my confidant of sorts, Mr. Caleb Hanks. Good evening, sir. How are you?
Micah, if I were any happier, I'd be out in the road screaming my own name.
Well, you know, earlier today, folks, full disclosure here, I found Caleb out in the road screaming his own name madly, and I was concerned that he may have become a mind-controlled meat puppet of the Illuminati.
I am an Illuminatus meat puppet.
I think you are. You know, I really think you might. So over the course of the program tonight, we are going to seek to understand better the riddle of secret societies and conspiracy theories that plague us in the everyday. It is maybe more unsettling than you think. And I'm certain that you can tell by the seriousness in my voice that I am not kidding in the least. Now, amidst all the conspiracies going on, there's a good bit of news just as well. For instance, a new study. This has just been revealed. It's been big news, and I think it was one of our lead stories today in the Grillion Report Daily News. A new study has revealed that dinosaurs were killed by a series of changes in the climate and environment, such as changing sea levels, varying temperatures, and extensive volcanic activity that ultimately created what is called, according to researchers, the perfect storm. Now, the research conducted by universities of Edinburgh and Birmingham in collaboration with the University of Oxford, Imperial College London, and other universities showed that the storm weakened dinosaurs' food chains, and hence this is actually what wiped them out. Now, I was scared there for a moment, Caleb, because when they started saying changes in the climate, I was going to say, for Pete's sake, please don't tell me that climate change not only causes these holes to open up beneath Siberia, but now it's killed the dinosaurs too. Look what you did with your aerosol can sprays. Look what you did by letting your cows stand out there in the pastures and fart to their heart's content. Look, you've killed the dinosaurs.
I knew chlorofluorocarbons were going to do something to hit terrible.
You killed the dinosaurs, like, retroactively. You didn't mean to do it. I'm kidding. Now, apparently, this is legitimate. It seems that maybe the dinosaurs could have survived the infamous incident involving a meteorite strike, which, as far back at least as second grade, I know that I endorsed. Dr. Steve Brusate of the University of Edinburgh's School of Geosciences said that the dinosaurs were indeed victims of colossal bad luck. See, that's what it was. Everything just befell all at once in an incredibly formidable series of unfortunate events that left the dinosaurs so sad they just decided to cash it in. All except for the pterosaurs, of course, and the Mokalium bimbes, which still reside in the heart of the Congo.
Number one cause of dinosaur death? Depression.
Yeah. Well, who would have thunk it? But it might be. No, actually, it was probably their food supply. You take away the food supply of a dino, and that will indeed kill him. Now, another expert weighing in on the story, Dr. Richard Butler of the School of Geography, Earth, and Environmental Sciences at the University of Birmingham, asserted that there had been intense scientific debate about the cause of the dinosaur extinction, and although their research suggested that dinosaur communities were particularly vulnerable to crime, no, I'm kidding, they were vulnerable at the time the asteroid hit, but this apparently means very little in terms of suggesting that they were doomed to extinction solely because of that incident. You know, again, maybe the verdict is still out, but the study that was published, again, in the Biological Reviews journal apparently says that it wasn't just that meteorite strike. It was a number of things. You know, Caleb, speaking of meteors, you just mentioned there's what's the meteor display that's going to be going on here over the next couple of nights. I saw a beautiful meteor streaking through, I guess it would have been the southeastern sky last night. I looked up just in time to catch this. It was purplish pink. And I tell you, it was one of those that you just watched it forever. It seemed to just fly forever as it streaked along, left this beautiful illuminated trail. It's always amazing to me that people see these meteorites and other celestial objects. Well, I mean, actually, I guess technically, really, a celestial object would I would think of a star or a planet when I'd see that. But, you know, falling space debris of the organic variety, the likes of which we see when meteorites enter Earth's atmosphere.
Yeah, I'll have to look up which meteor showers are tonight, but it's a peak of a very large cluster. Had a kind of a weird name. I'll look it up.
Yeah. I mean, as everybody knows, a star hound. Last night, in fact, I was, of course, this time of the year, it's very easy to see Saturn. And so
the Delta Aquariid meteor shower.
Oh, there we go. The Delta Aquariids. And, it, you know, it's easy to zoom in on Saturn, and among the visible planets, it may be the easiest to spot, which is so funny to me because it's always so faint in the sky to the naked eye. And then once you view it through your telescope, it's just incredible the clarity that you can see. I think really with a decent pair of binoculars, you could probably see the rings on Saturn. So, I mean, folks at home often take for granted what you can do with a good pair of binoculars, especially if you've got a pair of binoculars that's, you know, at least $100 or so. And a lot of astronomers will tell you, look, if you're really not serious about getting into astronomy, if you're just a backyard stargazer and you want to be able to enjoy looking at the sky at night, it's highly recommended that you actually start with binoculars, because you'll spend less money and you won't believe what you'll be able to see. But I actually do have about a 3.5 foot long telescope. Interestingly, it is not a Newtonian or a reflector, but it is a refractor. And a lot of people say, well, if you're interested in stargazing, why do you have that? But of course, as we've talked about on the program before, I wanted something that would serve as a dual purpose telescope that we could utilize for land-based viewing just as well, specifically with regard to the Brown Mountain Lights. And that is something that in future editions of this program I want to talk about a lot, because it's becoming more and more apparent to me, Caleb, that the word needs to be put out about the Brown Mountain Lights. There are so many people I've met over the years in this region who have seen this phenomenon. And I was actually, Caleb, just corresponding with B. Timothy Pennington, PhD, earlier today. Does that name ring a bell by chance to you?
Not that I can think of.
Well, if you look over here, actually, there's this book on UFOs that's right over here next to my desk. That's his book, Science, Skepticism, and UFOs. Well, actually, it's UFOs, Science, Skepticism. What is the title? Hold on.
Let me grab it here.
Okay, Science, Skeptics, and UFOs. I wanted to make sure I get this right, because he's going to be on the program here soon. The subtitle of the book, A Reluctant Scientist Explores the World of UFOs. This is a very interesting book. And so he had not followed the Brown Mountain Lights quite as closely, I guess, as I had. But he definitely talks about earthquake lights in this book. And so I sent him the paper that was written by John Durr and Robert Theriault earlier this year that has to do with earthquake lights. And so we were corresponding a good bit about that. But it became apparent to me that what we really need right now, I think, if we want to understand what's going on scientifically at the Brown Mountain location, if anything indeed truly anomalous is happening there, we need to be able to gather as much testimony from people. And it begins in a public format just like this. So if you are someone out there who, whether or not you live in the Western North Carolina region, if you've ever visited, you know, you got to keep in mind some of the great names of ufology. Jim Moseley, of course, my good friend Gene Steinberg over at the Paracast, Tim Beckley, Mr. UFO himself, all of these guys at one time or another have come through this region hoping to see the Brown Mountain Lights. A lot of people travel from all over the country, and not just all over the country, you know, but Caleb, they travel from all over the world. You and I are lucky because we live right here in this region. We can go down there and we can look for the lights anytime we want, and they don't show up all that often. So again, you know, my skepticism has increased more and more over the years. But I know it's important to gather eyewitness testimony from those who think that they have seen things down there. And I have some incredible photography that's been passed along to me that seems to show something truly anomalous, an airborne aerial illumination of some variety that occurs there. And so I put it out to the listeners, as we often do on this program, if you have seen something in the Linville Gorge, if you've traveled through this region, if you've been to Brown Mountain and you have seen these strange aerial illuminations that occur down around the vicinity of Brown Mountain, I'd love to hear from you. info@graylianreport.com. I ask people, please don't keep quiet about this, because what you have to say about what you may have seen will be more important than you may even realize. And I implore you certainly to consider contacting me, info@graylianreport.com, if you've got information about that. Now, later in the program, Caleb, we're going to be talking a good bit about conspiracies, a popular subject these days. And one of the reasons that I chose to talk about it tonight is the fact that I have gotten so many emails from listeners. Later in this hour, we will delve into a few of those. Some of them were just too good not to talk about on the show this week. And there's one, I haven't even let you read it yet, but it has to do, it's a follow-up with what Jeremy London was talking about when he sat in with us last week, and this might blow your mind. But before we get to that, one of the mothers of all modern conspiracies, of course, that still is a heated debate. Everyone from scientists and engineers to wacko crackpot conspiracy theorists have asked questions, and what they feel are legitimate questions and concerns that they have with 9/11. Now, this isn't a conspiracy story so much, but the fact that according to recent numbers, there have been, what is it, I think that we're up to 2,500 people now, apparently, who have developed cancer as a result of their work at Ground Zero. Now, of the 2,500 cases being reported this year, 1,655 are comprised of police officers, sanitation workers, and other city employees in New York, as well as volunteers and other individuals who were out there at the location. The overall total increases dramatically to 2,518 when firefighters and paramedics are also included in that figure. I don't know why they wouldn't be to begin with. Now, according to the FDNY, okay, and this is an agency of which I am unfamiliar of the acronym, but apparently their latest tally has determined that 863 members currently have, quote, cancer certified for 9/11 related treatment. Now, the New York Post noted on Monday this week that epidemiologists have seen the cancer rate in responders growing at a much higher rate than expected, particularly with certain cancers such as prostate, thyroid, leukemia, and multiple myeloma. Oh, it's just really, really sad. And apparently a retired FDNY captain had said, I knew that day a lot of us would get sick. The 60-year-old apparently had been one of those working at the Ground Zero site during and for several days after the attacks. Very sad news to hear. You know, Caleb, one of the big proponents of there being something having to do with a conspiracy in relation to 9/11, though, do you want to see if you can guess who it is, Caleb?
Alex Jones?
Well, yeah, Alex. Oh. Alex Jones, certainly. But no, you and I were talking about somebody earlier who has often asked questions about this. And he's in the news yet again. I'm talking about none other than Jesse Ventura. Do you remember that strange story that American sniper Chris Kyle, the late Chris Kyle, told about basically cold cocking Jesse Ventura at this Navy wake that was being hosted? Do you remember that story?
I do, and his strange death following.
Well, yeah, now, I don't know that we can necessarily assert that there was a link between them, but we did note that
Ventura killed him. I'm just kidding.
No, I think, here's what's bizarre. I had heard earlier today that there was a defamation case. I didn't know about this until just today. And apparently the jury could not come to a unanimous decision about this, but somebody's really disagreeing with us there. Jesse Ventura had apparently filed a defamation suit against the estate of the former American sniper, Chris Kyle, the estate being his widow. And this is truly strange to me because apparently, as this has been reported just in the last couple of hours, Jesse Ventura has won the case. Now, you may remember the story, and actually here to tell this story for us, actually I've got a little bit of audio. Chris Kyle tells his side of the story, but Jesse Ventura, very interestingly, had an extremely different perspective on all this. This is, just as a bit of a refresher, what Chris Kyle had said about the infamous incident with Jesse Ventura. Popular conspiracy theorist, so popular a conspiracy theorist that, of course, well, his television show bore that name.
You say you knocked Jesse Ventura to the floor with a punch. That happened? You knocked him out?
Yeah. Well, I knocked him down.
Knocked him down. Why? Why would you punch Ventura?
It was in 06, was the year that we lost our first two SEALs in Iraq. We came home. We lost our last guy just before coming home. We had the wake in a SEAL bar there in Coronado. He was there for a speaking engagement at a bud ceremony, graduating class.
Because he was a SEAL, right? He's
yes, sir.
Was a Navy SEAL. And you took exception.
I did find a problem with it. The family was there. I asked him to please tone it down, that we did not want to upset the family members of Mikey Mansoor.
But I want to be clear, Ventura wasn't attacking him at all, verbally bashing him. He was just bashing the whole thing in general.
Yes, sir. Until he said, we deserve to lose a few guys.
He said, we deserve to, we, the United States.
No, he said, you, y'all, deserve to lose a few guys.
Now, at this point, Chris Kyle says that he felt that Jesse Ventura was making a personal slight against the members there who were at this wake. And unfortunately, when Jesse Ventura stepped off the page, he took, off the stage, Kyle decided to take action and apparently punched Ventura, at which time he says that he ran away from the scene because there were police standing nearby. He wrote about this in the autobiography that he wrote. He didn't mention Ventura by name, but he made it apparently very clear who he was talking about. And in that segment, that brief audio clip you just heard, even Bill O'Reilly at one point had said, you know, we're all pretty sure who you were talking about. And so with knowledge of this and acknowledging even on public television, on national airwaves, that it had been Jesse Ventura, Chris Kyle apparently kept going out and telling the story of what had happened. Now, I'm not saying it's not true, but that's his side of the story. Jesse Ventura, on the other hand, does tell a very different story.
No idea why this person is saying it or for what purpose it's to serve. But, you know, if he stated that he struck me, knocked me down, and then fled, I want people to understand clearly he's confessing then to the crime of assault, and it's assault on a former governor, an elected official, a former elected official twice. I want to clear his name because he's confessing to assaulting me, and it didn't happen.
Now, that's very interesting, a statement that Jesse Ventura made a few months ago where he stated and has continued to say it didn't happen, and he says, I want to clear Chris Kyle's name because if this is to be believed, had it happened, according to Jesse Ventura, then he has assaulted a former governor. And he's right. He's totally right. But apparently what this resulted in was this defamation case. Now, the New York Times reported just this evening that although verdicts in such cases are customarily unanimous, both sides agreed to split a verdict this time around. The verdict 8-2 was reached after more than a week of deliberations. Jurors awarded Mr. Ventura $500,000. And apparently, get this, there was another $1.3 million for what was termed the author's unjust enrichment. Interesting. Now, of course, this is the widow of Chris Kyle, representing the estate of the gentleman in question. Very, very interesting story. And, you know, I didn't expect to see that that follow-up, frankly, Caleb. I thought that was a bit strange indeed, almost as strange as this story right here. And talking about getting really strange, this one has a bit of a tie-in with something that we talked about on the Micah Hanks radio program, I believe just last week. Have you seen this story, Caleb? It's very sensational. A sinister Satan sign that mysteriously appeared on a 4-year-old boy is proving a devil to explain, or at least so reported The Sun, the famous tabloid. The paper faced a fierce backlash after carrying the story. Apparently, they were accused of, quote, going on a witch hunt after publishing the story entitled Boy, Age 4, Has Mark of the Devil. But what's funny is I looked at this picture, and first of all, I mean, I don't think there's any way that you could look at this mark on this child's chest if the mark is real, if it's legitimate. It's certainly not a birthmark, and it didn't even occur to me at first what that looks exactly like. And Caleb, you actually pointed it out to me. What does it resemble?
It looked to me like the symbol from the Zodiac Killer. Well, but honestly, in my opinion, it looks to me as though the kid had some sort of toy that resembled some sort of scope and probably had it pressed up against his stomach.
Yeah, I mean, there are any number of objects that might have actually created that pattern. Again, it doesn't look like, I mean, I don't know.
I don't usually jump to initially, it's obviously a mark fueled by Satan and the child is possessed.
Yeah, and I don't think that the kid's the reincarnation of the Zodiac Killer either, but I'm looking at a couple of the spreads from the tabloid right here, though. Mammon sign on chest of Samuel, age 4. Crosshair symbol leaves docs stumped. They're calling him Boyezelbub. This is just so silly. You see this kind of thing on scary sci-fi films. It isn't supposed to happen to families like us, according to the child's mother.
I'm surprised Drudge Report carried this one.
Did he carry it?
Yeah.
I'm not. You know, again, I've mentioned this many times on the program. First of all, the ufological tie-in here, and we're going to see as we get into the realm of conspiracy later on in the program that quite often you will find a ufological tie-in with a lot of this stuff. As a matter of fact, we're going to see how conspiracies, the FBI, Marilyn Monroe, and UFOs are all related a little later in hour two, among other things. But, you know, again, when you've got something called the Drudge Report, keep in mind Project Grudge, predecessor to Project Blue Book, resulted in what was called the Grudge Report. And knowing for a fact that on many instances, Matt Drudge has linked UFO-related stories. And
yeah, I mean, I've seen him put UFO stuff up before, but I mean, this one is just, to me, just like such an obvious BS tabloid story.
Well, this is again why Matt Drudge on many occasions in the past has also been accused of essentially yellow journalism. It's just, you know, whatever the big, hot, flashy, you know, tabloid headlines are. Now, you know, sure, I think that there's an element of that. And by the same token, I also think that, you know, in America, you have a right to do whatever you want to do, and especially since he's not the one writing the stories, he's linking to the headlines. You don't have to be a, as he's often linked with conservative talk radio hosts, I don't think you have to be a conservative pundit or a person who listens to those programs to find Drudge's page useful. And I've noticed, Caleb, that there is a preponderance almost of UFO-related, ghost-related, and general weird stuff that's linked to the Drudge Report. But again, I think it all goes back to he has to have an interest in UFOs. And I've always thought, God, if I could get the guy to answer one question for me ever, I would just say, was it intentional when you chose to call your page the Drudge Report? Was that a nod toward the UFO Project Grudge?
You should email him. He probably doesn't get many emails.
No, that's just it. I have emailed him. I've even emailed him UFO stories before trying to get him to link them just to see if he would pick a UFO story. So no luck thus far. I'd love to see, though, what other people may have to say about it. You know, if you've ever had any success with Matt Drudge, or if you've ever heard him, more importantly, acknowledge what may or may not be going on with regard to Drudge versus Grudge, I'd love to hear about that. And as for the poor devil boy, you know, people are pretty upset. They're not very happy about this. People took to the tweets. I think we got a couple of tweets here. One woman says, the Sun should pull their damaging front page story with photo of a child. He does not carry mark of the devil. He's a real child. Another says, tomorrow's Sun headline is Boy 4 has mark of the devil. Do you ever get embarrassed, Rupert Murdoch? Please sort it out. Well, again, I think the big problem is, you know, should the media be making a spectacle out of this child in the story? You know, the thing, again, it doesn't even look like a lasting mark. It looks like the kid was laying against something that happened to be the same symbol that was used by the Zodiac Killer. But again, when there's a child involved, to me, that's maybe a little unethical. Anyway, we'll pick it up on the other side of this break. It is the Gray Alien Report. I'm Micah Hanks, and we'll be right back. I'm Micah Hanks. This is the Gray Alien Report. You've locked in yet again, keeping you company every Tuesday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. I've got one of the boys in the bunker with me here tonight, Caleb Hanks, who is strangely quiet. Caleb, I've never heard you being so quiet. Are you all right?
Well, I am. I'm kind of turning into a transdimensional space goat, and I'm starting the very beginning stages of this metamorphosis.
If you haven't, speaking of space goats, by the way, if you didn't head over to the Gray Alien Report and look at the daily news today, look at that story I linked. As a matter of fact, actually, I'm going to pop over there real quick and just read the headline to you. This one was sent along to me by our dear friend Cassidy O'Connor in New York. And this one's really strange, too. Now, in the midst of all these stories we've got about beasts of Bodmin and all these other things, there's this story that she sent along today about this strange thing going on in North Carolina. And I linked the story, UFO Weirdness, Is There Something Strange Stalking Cows in North Carolina? It's a really creepy story, especially for somebody like me, because years ago I was looking into a purported cattle mutilation that occurred over there in Madison County, and it reminded me of all that. Boy, I tell you, really weird. You know, I'd recommend people go take a look at it as well. I mean, some of these headlines, we don't even have time to get to all of them today on the program. So in addition to what you hear about on the Grayling Report each week, every day we've got this entire roundup of the weirdest news anywhere on the net. And some wonderful people who helped contribute to that today. As a matter of fact, it was all Graylian gals. We had Lindsay Morrison, Kat Nicholas, Eileen Williams, wonderful folks out there helping us out. But a couple of these stories, for instance, Satanists purportedly use Hobby Lobby to block pro-life agenda. Boy, that one sounds like it belongs right there next to the story about the poor kid, you know. Actually, the thing is the story in the last segment, the poor kid and the son, probably didn't belong in print anyway, but you know how people are these days. Sensational. And then what were these UFOs spotted over Toronto Saturday night? Well, as a matter of fact, I happen to know. Jim Harold and I will be talking about that later this week on the Paranormal Report, which is, of course, not just an audio podcast. We had somebody who emailed us this week and said, you know, I've loved this podcast for a long time, and I'd always downloaded the audio version. I finally checked out the video today, and wow, I can actually see you guys. Yeah, just check it out on YouTube. And, of course, we link it every week there at graylingreport.com. And speaking of you guys out there, I did say that I had some listener emails I wanted to get to. You're going to start seeing a connection to all this, Caleb, here. Because more and more in these emails, you're going to start noticing, that there, I think, is an undeniable connection with conspiracies. Conspiracies. You're going to hear so much about this. And one of the things that we actually heard about, I heard about from one of the listeners, that is, had to do with this, and this is yet another conspiracy theory, and one that personally I don't buy, the idea that there are aliens on the moon. Why would this be on somebody's mind? Well, of course, there was this program that aired the other night, and this was on Sci-Fi. And it was,
I actually watched a little bit of that last night.
Well, before I get into this, tell me, what did you think about it? Because I didn't watch it, and people have been emailing me. They want to know what I think. You know, what was your impression of this program?
I mean, the production was decently well done, but I think it's hard for me to actually sit and take it really seriously, because I think I'm just biased, because I just don't buy it to begin with. But I would say, yeah, I don't know. It's hard for me to swallow.
Well, again, I did not watch this program, and so I don't know specifically all the things that were discussed on the show, although I had a good idea about what some of the stories would be, because I happen to know personally a few of the people, the guests who actually appeared on it. Now, we got an email from Dan who wrote, Mike, I was wondering if you caught any of the Aliens on the Moon Sci-Fi show. They had a lot of material new to me, and while I'm not as thoroughly versed as someone like you, I was shocked on some of it. And he goes on to say, it sucks that you can't spend all your time reading, watching, etc. about this stuff, you know, and acknowledging, of course, the fact that I do get to spend virtually all my time studying this stuff. Hence this email. Can you weigh in? I really trust your opinion and would like to know your take on. And he asks first about the Phobos monolith. I remember, I believe it was Buzz Aldrin who had gone on one of the mainstream news stations and was talking about all the wonderful things out there in the universe, and says on Phobos, the Martian moon, there's a monolith like in 2001, A Space Odyssey, at which time the commentator very quickly cuts to a different subject. But I've heard that for a long time. And as I understand, I believe that Phobos has a slightly irregular shape, and so I'm not surprised that there might be natural structures on that moon, which could be anomalous looking. Who knows?
Yeah, they were focusing in on one thing that to me didn't seem. It was kind of like a crater, but it looked like there was almost to me what looked like picture pixelization. But they were trying to make it look like it was some sort of base. And I mean,
oh yeah, well, and I got to tell you,
through all of the like weird little digital artifacts that'll pop up and stuff like that, it's really kind of hard to say, yeah, this is a definitive structure on the moon. You know what I'm saying?
Well, you know, and again, this monolith here that they're talking about is on Phobos, which is a Martian moon. But I've seen some of the photos you're talking about on the moon, Caleb. And actually, I even had an image analyst, one of whom works with the space program, who had told me and broke down to me in a very thorough explanation. This is what causes that variety of pixelation and that variety of artifact that so many purport to show, you know, structures and, you know, again, essentially squared off edges that wouldn't occur naturally on the lunar surface. There are some strange things, though. Like, I think, was it Arcturus, I think, maybe, is the crater that, for, gosh, maybe the last couple of centuries, people have talked about seeing a white light that emanates from the center of this crater. And I began to look into this, and unfortunately, as much as I'd like to think that there's some sort of a great big mirror up there that when the sunlight hits the moon just right, a huge flash of light blasts back at Earth, there are certain places where newly exposed, I guess you can't call it Earth, because it's, well, the moon, but I mean newly exposed...
Moon.
Yeah, newly exposed moon surface or lunar dust or whatever can have a brighter color than other areas of the moon. And what this reflective property is called albedo, and it can actually lead to an extremely bright reflective surface that at times has been noticed by professional and amateur astronomers alike over the last, 150 years or so. And so there are a lot of reports, if you dig back into it, I wrote an article about this for Mysterious Universe, that deals with the idea that there are spots on the moon that can be so bright due to the fact that newer ground is exposed in those locations, and that can actually be conducive to a reflective kind of phenomenon. So there are all kinds of interesting things about the moon. One of the fascinating ones that I read today in another story was, eventually when we get up there on the moon, we may even find ancient Earth fossils on the moon. That would be fascinating, wouldn't it? Another thing that Daniel writes about is a Mars image taken by Curiosity rover that apparently resembles images supposedly taken out or that took out Russian Mars satellites, Phobos 1 and 2. Now, I remember the story about the infamous satellite, and as it's depicting its last images, it seems to show some sort of a large object that some have interpreted as being like a station, like some sort of an alien base or something. But again, this is something in relation to Mars, not to an alien base on our own moon. And then finally, he asks about the testimony of Dr. John Brandenburg. And again, having not seen the program, I don't know specifically what he said on that episode. But, it sounds to me like a lot of the things that were being addressed on this Aliens on the Moon show are actually talking about aliens on Mars's moon, or one of them. Anyway, as far as it goes to say that there are alien bases on the moon, I don't buy it. And you'd have to show me some incredible evidence to get me to buy it. Which leads us to our next email. Dwayne writes, "Wow, just all respect for the systematic scumbag liar you are. Of course, there has been 100% purposeful cover-up." And apparently, Caleb, I'm just pandering to the global elitists' conventional model of standardized dissemination of lies to the public.
People got to be careful who they call liars. That one guy got punched in the face by Buzz Aldrin.
Well, yeah, and of course, Jesse Ventura purportedly... he denies it, but as we've already said, he gets up there and he criticizes the military and gets punched. So I don't want to get punched by anybody for being a systematic scumbag liar. Actually, I want full disclosure here. That was not in relation to the idea that there are aliens on the moon. I don't want anyone in the listening audience to be, misled into thinking that I've been trying to deceive you about the reality of what Richard Hoagland has spent decades talking about. No, this actual email from Dwayne had to do with giant skeleton conspiracies. That is why I am a scumbag liar, because I am saying that the Smithsonian, in fact, is not necessarily hiding all this information, because, yet again, associates of mine and yours truly have worked very hard to actually recover information about large skeletons found in North America. Some of that information comes directly from the Smithsonian themselves. If they were hiding it, why do we have it? And if you'd like to see some more information about that, if you go to MicahHanks.com, during my recent Coast to Coast appearance, I actually put up a supplementary page with a bunch of articles and lots of pictures. And you can literally get on there and see one of the largest human skulls on record, a 2,100 cubic centimeter skull that is still in the Smithsonian's offsite storage facility. So go take a look at that. See for yourself if indeed I am a systematic scumbag liar. Now, this is probably my favorite email this week. Damien writes, "Micah, I heard your show the other night when you were talking about celebrities in the Illuminati. And some statements were made about Dave Chappelle." That was by Jeremy London, who is an irregular Graylian, who's been a friend of ours for a long time. We'll have to have him back in the studio at some point. "Well, Dave lives in an Ohio town called Yellow Springs, home of the Antioch College, where his father once taught. It's about 20 minutes or so from Dayton, where I live. My wife and I were there one day when someone started yelling something at us, and to our surprise, it was Dave Chappelle." Wow. "He was pointing to my wife's Johnny Cash shirt, and he asked us, 'How tall do you think Johnny Cash was?'" Caleb, just imagine this. How random would this be? You're walking down the street with your wife, and then you hear somebody yell, and you turn around, and there's Dave Chappelle asking your wife how tall she thinks Johnny Cash was. Well, we had a little debate about it, and then Dave said, the reason I ask is because I was in San Francisco a few months ago, and I could have swore I saw Johnny Cash, and it struck me, Chappelle said, you could fake your own death if you had the money and the resources. He then went on this entire thing, Damien continues, about celebrities faking their deaths. You know, Caleb, if I talk to you about celebrities faking their deaths, who's one of the most famous examples that comes to mind?
Andy Kaufman.
That's a good... Oh, man. You know what? In hour two, we're going to be going down my top 10 conspiracy deaths of all time list. I'll tell you, there's another famous...
Were you thinking of somebody else?
I was, but I cannot believe I didn't include Andy Kaufman on my list.
Oh, yeah, man. That was the whole plan. But you were thinking of Tupac, though.
No, I wasn't. But here's a hint. Say no more if you can manage to guess it. I want to keep people in suspense. It was someone in the music industry. It was not Tupac. But he made number two on my list. We'll look at that in the next hour. So Chappelle begins talking about different people who he thinks were involved. And the old idea of celebrities faking their deaths, and Damien says he alluded to Michael Jackson several times. By the way, it's not Michael Jackson on my list, although he would qualify too. And he told us around how the time he left his TV show, Chappelle did, that he went to Africa and that he literally read at one point his own obituary. He said that he had given serious thought to letting the world believe that he was actually dead. It was very surreal, and I was almost slack-jawed. Wow.
Had a publication actually put out his obituary?
Apparently, Dave Chappelle told our listener, Damien, who Damien and I correspond a good bit, Chappelle told him that he had, while in Africa, read his own obituary and had thought about just letting him ride with it and let people believe he was actually dead. So he continues, Chappelle just went on and kept coming back to the media and the industry and the way that they treat or mistreat artists and entrepreneurs, and he brought up Michael Jackson again and again, and it was pretty weird. I figured you might get a kick out of this, although I should note that Dave was obviously, well, a little intoxicated. Now, I've met several famous people over the years, but meeting Dave Chappelle was probably the weirdest. Damien, you get email of the week right there, buddy. That's that's incredible. Hey, I challenge our listeners, if you've got one that you think would top Damien's meeting Dave Chappelle, rambling about conspiracies and the Michael Jackson conspiracy over whether he faked his own death, if you've got one that can top that, I want to hear from you, info@graylianreport.com. Mark, one of our faithful news hounds, also wrote me just before we took to the airwaves. He says, I hope that this finds you well. I finally caught up with your podcast, and now I want to make a few comments. For one, as for the use of Mysterious, those people at Mysterious Universe are mysterious when they play that Chipmunk Hoedown music whenever they mention you. Caleb, I think whenever we mention Mysterious Universe, we just need like a didgeridoo sound effect.
Or the mating call of a bunyip.
Or I could play the sound that I promised I would never play on the show ever again, which is the most annoying sound in the world that I myself created. Now, I did humanity a good thing. I didn't do like these people in these laboratories who store smallpox and stuff and just keep it around just to say that I have it. I played it on the air once, okay, maybe twice. And then I deleted it. I got rid of it. I don't have it anymore. I do not. Not on my broadcast computer, at least. I think, however, though, that over here somewhere I may still have it on another computer. But I've... Yep, there it is. So it's sort of cryogenically frozen over on one of our recording modules, which does not go to air. So I can promise you with almost certainty that you will never hear the most annoying noise in the world ever. No, it's not leading up to playing it. I'm not going to do that. But one of our listeners wrote to me and said, you know, Mike, I think it was actually our brother Billy over in the UK, Billy Clark. And Billy said, you know, Micah, you might think this is weird, but I actually found that incredibly relaxing. Only you, Billy. Only you. The second point Mark writes about, he says, I'm surprised that I only heard about this Taiwan plane crash in my investment newsletter, maybe because it wasn't a jet or maybe because it was less than 100 casualties. CNN.com reported about it. It was another incident that, and I talked about it on the Graylian X podcast. This is something that, again, was not widely reported, but it was another plane crash that I believe, if I remember correctly in the timeline, I think that it actually transpired. I think it happened... Was it just before MH17? But then there was, of course, the Air Algeria or whatever it was that went down immediately after that crashed, I believe, in Mali. Point is it's extremely hard to keep track of them all right now because there have been so many. And that's why I addressed on the Graylian X podcast the fact that the FAA has even said, look, you know, we've got to say there's no connection between all these crashes. But boy, there sure have been a lot of them. And then three, Mark says, as for Glenn Beck and the JFK assassination, I find it interesting that everyone forgets the United States House Select Committee on Assassinations. Now, I want to get to that a bit in hour two. But right now, I'll just read an excerpt that Mark sent along in his email. Quote, the committee completed its investigation in 1978 and issued its final report the following year, concluding that Kennedy was probably assassinated as a result of a conspiracy. Now, of course, that result is under debate, too, Mark finishes by saying. And the reason it's under debate, of course, is because of the fact that I think that at the time that conclusion was made, it was swayed just before the release of the House Select Committee on Assassinations document. It was swayed by the presentation of an audio recording that was accidentally made by, you've probably heard about this, the police officer who was riding, and apparently the on button for which engaged the recording device on his police motorcycle had been locked into the on position. He didn't realize it was recording, and it recorded the entire time that apparently the assassination took place, and it was purported after the fact, after acoustic analysis, that there were not one or two, not even three, but four gunshots that could be heard on that recording. That has been disputed since, and it's believed that that information actually swayed the determinations made by the House Select Committee. But we'll talk more about that in hour two. Wrapping up our email section here, Caleb, I want to finish with this email from Olanarian, I think is how you pronounce this name. Olanarian? I'm not sure. That's a strange name. But I'm not sure that this is of Earthling origin. Anyway, he writes, hi, I came across your organization while researching secret societies. I would like to know how you operate. Do you exist in Africa, Nigeria, to be specific, and what are your goals and aspirations? What would you expect from members? Caleb, this can only be a reference to that clandestine group known as the world's most secret society. The strangest, most secret society that has ever existed. It is so secret that they have no name. It is so secret that there is simply no name that could even describe it, other than that it is the most secret society in the world. And that's what we're going to leave it at right there. I think it is indeed the most secret anything that's ever existed. But if you'd like to learn a little bit more about that, you can visit the same website that apparently Olanarian found. It no doubt was middletheory.com. And you'll look up there in the toolbar and you'll see a link to the Machiavellian order known as the world's most secret society. I think a comeback is in order. And with that, of course, we've got to go out to break right now. But when we come back here, we will continue our discussion before delving into the dark world of conspiracies in hour two. There are too many to devote to in a single hour, but we're going to get as much out on the plate to you as we possibly can. It is the Graylian Report with the Hanks Bros. I am the mouth of the South, Micah Hanks, and we'll be back with you right after this. In the summer of 1848, crew members aboard the HMS Daedalus sailing through the South Atlantic observed something that defied all rational explanation. What it appeared to be was something directly out of the prehistoric era. The head, which the creature kept about 4 feet above the water, was without any doubt that of a snake. It was dark brown in color, although there was a yellowish white about the throat, and what the captain described as some sort of a mane, or perhaps something like that of a horse, or rather a bunch of seaweed washed about the back. Following the protruding head, the body, which cut its way through the water, revealed another 60 feet of the animal behind it, extending in a straight line that all the men could see. In fact, Captain McQuay and his crew estimated that probably another 30 to 40 feet of the animal existed below the surface. It passed rapidly, Captain McQuay wrote of the encounter, but so close under our lee quarter that had it been a man of my acquaintance, I should easily have recognized his features with the naked eye. This and other mysteries of time and space await you on Enigmas. Every month, a special feature offered to Graylian X subscribers. Sign up today. Visit graylianreport.com/X. Go beyond the bunker. We'll be right back. You know, Caleb, when you arrived tonight, you probably noticed I had a couple of books over there on your desk that had to do with hauntings and the like. Looking ahead, a couple of... Yeah, there they are. Looking
are you trying to send me a message? Are
yes.
You saying that, are you saying your house is haunted, but you can't talk about it because the ghosts will attack you? Blink twice for yes.
Yes. No. No, I mean no. No, actually, Caleb, if I wanted to tell you something like that, I'd just text it to you. As a matter of fact, purportedly, that is what happened to an exorcist. Boy, this is maybe the most bizarre story I've seen all day.
An exorcist, well, a demon with a very modern vocabulary.
Yes, apparently, yes. One that's quite hip to the times. As a matter of fact, speaking of exorcism, our dear friend Father Jack Ashcraft has just joined us in the chat room. Glad to see everybody out there. Everyone from MIBs and Indrid Colds to real-life exorcists, and of course, the man who took the red pill. RPJ, I just wanted to say, by the way, I, on the other hand, took the green pill, and hence, here I am. I remain like that knight at the end of the third Indiana Jones film, you know. I remain down here in the bunker. That's the truth, is I really never leave the bunker. I stay down here like a holy Templar knight who will live forever as long as I am in the possession of the Grail Inn. Now, that said, exorcisms are all the rage these days, and so it's only natural that some priests, according to an article at whofortedblog.com, will be feeling some rage from their nemesis. The story is that Father Marian Rachel, representing the good parishioners of Jarosław, Poland, recently applied the power of Christ to compel an evil spirit out of a teenage girl. But supposedly, text messages were sent to Father Rachel that were purportedly from the demon. Or I guess they were sent by the girl who was purporting that it was the demon. And apparently some of the text messages read the likes of, "Shut up, preacher, and so all do not save yourselves. Idiot, you pathetic old preacher, you are weak. Tomorrow you die." Interestingly, the headline, which reads, "I hate you," I don't think that was actually said. But it is said that the preacher had received texts. You know, again, I think that in this instance, I would wonder if this was so much indeed the work of a mischievous or even demonic spirit overtaking the girl as it was a girl who was sending text messages to the preacher. Father Jack in the chat room says, "I'm calling bunk." My friend, I think I'm going to have to agree with you on that one just as well. You know, some of these headlines, the mind simply reels. Almost as badly as it does when we delve into that twilight realm, Caleb, of the conspiracy theory. It is a highly weaponized term in American culture today, and that's why we're going to wade right into the middle of the muck. To hell with Grudge Report. We're going to call it the Smudge Report during the next hour as Caleb and I tackle American conspiracy theories here on the Graylian Report.
Imagine no longer being tied down to your computer, but having the freedom to take live talk radio with you anywhere you go. TalkStream Live introduces our first ever iPhone application. The talk shows you follow now follow you, and your iPhone is now the fastest and easiest way to stay connected to the best talk radio on the internet. Let TalkStream Live transform the way you listen to radio. Listen to live talk shows 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Mobile talk radio from TalkStream Live. Now available in the iTunes App Store.
It seems everywhere we look these days, we're hearing something new about drones. In fact, my local television news station contacted me recently, and they wanted to interview me about it. Literally, it seems like everybody is seeing drones. Now, some of these are operated by military, others may be by weekend hobbyists who enjoy flying remote-controlled planes. But what if I told you not all of these drones are so easily identified? What if I told you that there were strange aircraft out there that are too small to be piloted? But many of them don't even have wings. They behave more like missiles or torpedoes. And nobody seems to know where they come from. If you're like me and you'd like to know more about what may be flying around out there in our skies that we don't know about, you need to take a look at my book, The Ghost Rockets. In it, you'll find incredible reports from some of the most credible sources, including trained pilots and aviation professionals, as well as databases maintained by NASA. UFO doesn't have to mean a spaceship from another world. In fact, I think what may be going on right here on planet Earth could be a lot stranger. If you want the inside scoop on drones, missiles, and phantom projectiles in our skies, then don't wait. Get a copy today of The Ghost Rockets, available on Amazon.com and at GralianReport.com. These aren't the drones you hear about every day on the news, and what you'll learn may change your mind about UFOs. The Ghost Rockets, available in paperback and on Amazon Kindle.
The Gralian Report. The unusual. Weird news. Anomalies. Exopolitics. It's beyond the fringe, where conspiracy theory can become conspiracy fact. This is the Gralian Report with your host, Micah Hanks.
From the heart of the hollow earth, and I promise you, these aren't the drones you're looking for. I am Micah Hanks, the Math of the South, and you've locked in once again to the Gralian Report, here in Hour 2, where we are exploring the mysteries of conspiracy theories. It's a troubling preponderance of stories that we are faced with here in the American media today, and it's not just in the American media, it's all around the globe, in truth. Allegations that there are elite organizations, secret societies, none so secret as the world's most secret society of middle theory fame, but secret organizations that carry out their business, whether or not it inhibits the rights and privileges of others, whether or not it usurps the laws of any given jurisdiction or land or territory. These global elitists purportedly do what they wish, when they wish, how they wish, and they don't expect any questions to be asked. And I think actually, to an extent, that is all true and valid. As a matter of fact, I mean, if you try to say that secret societies and global groups, literally, that stretch beyond the boundaries of countries and their jurisdictions internationally, if you think that there are not global groups that seek to control finance, government, and a number of things like this, I mean, I would have to disagree with you. In fact, I know, and I already mentioned my friend Father Jack Ashcraft in the chat room there. He's going to be a guest on the program here in the next few weeks, and I know this is going to be one thing that we'll be discussing a bit. It's something that is fascinating to many of us. And of course, I'm extremely fascinated by the idea that there are global organizations because, in fact, I know them to exist. And frankly, I think it's rather silly that in the mainstream, we do so often see a field day, a circus made of all this. The idea that there are secret societies, it's something that is played down and poo-pooed and laughed at. But again, have you ever heard of the Freemasons or the Skull and Bones? You know, these Ivy League fraternities. I think that we underestimate at times the actual influence that they have, not only on just American culture and politics, but also on international affairs. The election of elected officials, which really, if you're influencing elections, that casts doubt over the idea that elections are actually meaningful at all. And to what extent an actual election is occurring versus an individual or a group of individuals, perhaps a bloodline of individuals, being appointed to positions. Now, before some rampant skeptic comes along and says that because I employ that term bloodline that I'm being racist, very clearly what I'm referring to is, of course, you see that there are families, certain families, that time and time and time and time again find their way into positions of government. Of course, the Bush family is one of these, but there are many. And you can go off down the rabbit hole if you wish to on that one and look at, of course, you know, the Bush family's tie-ins with, of course, Osama bin Laden, any number of things. Prohibition, which actually that ties in more, I think, with the Kennedys, which we'll be discussing invariably later in this hour. But there was a story that was sent along to us by Jeremy London, Caleb, that Gizmodo carried, and it's titled "The Ways Modern Secret Societies Use the Internet to Hide in Plain Sight." Secret societies are as old as humanity, but they sure as hell aren't going away anytime soon. But in an internet age where privacy is harder than ever to come by, secret societies face all kinds of new challenges, and Matt King has seen some of their newest tricks firsthand when he wrote about it for The Atlantic. Now, what he specifically was discussing was how he was approached by New York University's Euclidean Society. Now, first through Facebook messages from a dead man, then messages that were sent under a pseudonym. There were bizarre anonymous group chats, Google Forms, questionnaires, and seldom seen Blogspot science. So Mr. Matt King basically explains that after all this correspondence, this led to a sort of a recruitment scheme that during the second stage led to an email which indexed a bevy of ostensibly secret information scattered and hidden through obscurity on the public internet. He wrote, a mass email was sent to recruits' NYU accounts, which had provided in the questionnaire. The sender's alias was John S/Odysseus.
What a strange name.
What, Odysseus?
Yeah.
John S/Odysseus. I don't know. I obviously it was, you know, again, a pseudonym.
Yeah.
And he introduced himself as a senior member of the society and head of its recruitment efforts. Now, he told us that the process couldn't begin until we chose a nom de plume for ourselves and created a corresponding Gmail account to be used exclusively for all society-related communication. His email included a list of links to over a dozen Blogspot pages, YouTube videos, and Google groups, all of which he told us to read through and to absorb ASAP. He also sent us a Google Calendar invite to join him on a weekly online group chat, the first of which would focus on discussing this trove of information. I don't know. I mean, in a weird way, some of this sounds, just maybe a tiny, tiny, tiny bit bogus to me. Not to say necessarily that it is. And I wouldn't say, in fact, Caleb, that I'm entirely surprised that maybe secret societies would utilize the World Wide Web to recruit and to disseminate information. There was that Locust 33 thing a while back that I think ended up totally having nothing to do with secret societies, but the elaborate measures that these individuals were going through to try and tap hackers led a lot of people to think that it was one of two things: either a government agency that was recruiting hackers for use in spying and encryption technology and related projects, or it was a secret society looking for members. But again, I would argue, and this is something we've talked about in the past since we're going to talk about Kennedy a little later, if secret societies and their influence on global affairs were not of importance, why would Kennedy himself have talked about it? Here's some of that famous historic audio from what is famously referred to, though I think a bit loosely, as the Kennedy conspiracy speech, and he certainly does address that.
Ladies and gentlemen, the very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings.
Or are we? I think that's a good question. Are we really? Now, of course, I think he, in the large part in that particular speech, was discussing the news and basically how information is carried by news agencies and essentially the necessity for freedom of speech and things like this, rather than things being carried out entirely in secret. But he makes very clear in the references to secret societies, secret oaths, and secret proceedings, all of which seem to fall under the proceedings of, well, presumed secret societies. Full disclosure here, and this is part of what's so hilarious about it, and no offense to Olaniran, or the gentleman whose name from Nigeria was having difficulty determining whether it was of earthly origin or not. I have gotten numerous emails from people who seriously think that the world's most secret society, as McNonymous and I have referred to it in the past on Middle Theory, they seriously think that it is a real organization. And it obviously is, right? I've even gotten, I won't name the agencies, but I've actually gotten emails from people with three-letter agencies in the email address who have inquired about it, which tells me a couple of things. One, there is incredible appeal both among civilians and members of government when it comes to the idea of secret societies and their influence, and of course this appeal of being a part of something that is exclusive. But in addition to that, I think also what we have is we have, I think, a heightened level of suspicion, especially in the United States, and especially following Edward Snowden and his release of documents and the like. I bet you there are people out there who, in all seriousness or rather in the purest traditional sense of fun and tomfoolery, when McNonymous and I began talking about the world's most secret society, which is a real secret society, obviously, I hope everyone can tell how serious I'm being right now, obviously, I'm sure that there are people who nonetheless have seen that, and tomfoolery be damned. They think it's probably a cover organization for something, you know? Oh, goodness. No, no, it's really just a secret society. That's all. One that was cooked up by none other than Mr. Machiavelli himself. One that was so secret that he was the only member of the secret society during his lifetime. And it was so secret that he kept the secret all to himself and took it with him to his grave. Thank God guys like Christopher McCollum and I were smart enough to figure it out somehow, or make it up, and resurrect the world's most secret society, or else Machiavelli would have been history's only member. He would have been the only member of his own secret society.
What a lonely secret society.
Yeah, exactly. What fun would it have been to be the only member of your own damn secret society? So, Machiavelli, I'm with you. And Caleb is too, whether you like it or not, by the way. Don't look at me like that. Blink twice if you want out. The world's most secret society is recruiting. In fact, everybody there in the chat room, if you want to be members, you can be members too. Don't worry, there's nothing nefarious, and all that's required of you as members is to, well, I haven't gotten that far with it yet. I think it's important to lend a little bit of satire to all this because, you know, the whole secret society thing, and you know, we're talking about this before the show, Caleb, it is pervasive and not just, again, in like, you know, white American conservative culture. One area where it is incredibly, incredibly influential, the idea and the interest in the Illuminati and secret societies is the American hip-hop culture. You know, as a matter of fact, there was this kind of a non-story, but it popped up in the Google News feed here talking about, what was this rapper's name?
YG.
YG saying that he, and it says in the article, he was somewhat tongue-in-cheek, but he says that he still thinks Tupac might be alive out there. No, Tupac didn't make my top 10 conspiracy deaths list, but there are a lot of people who think that he might have convincingly faked his death. Dave Chappelle seems to think that Michael Jackson might have done that, or at least that he could have done that.
If Tupac did it, he did a hell of a job.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And I frankly don't think that Michael Jackson faked his death either. I could see why someone like Michael Jackson would have wanted to.
Yeah.
But I don't think he faked his death. But, you know, nonetheless, people still believe in these conspiracy theories, and that being, of course, a conspiracy idea that has not been proven, but that remains a theoretical principle that has been proposed by someone who purports to have evidence to support it. That's really all a conspiracy theory is. These days, yet again, I've said the media has kind of weaponized that term, and they use that to essentially denote any crackpot who claims that they have some sort of knowledge of an alternative scenario that is not accepted by consensus viewpoints toward this or that. For instance, arguably the two most famous are 9/11, with there being a range of conspiracy theories. The official narrative, of course, is that there were terrorists that took out the Twin Towers, and they had a much farther-reaching plot that, thank God, wasn't fully enacted. But then again, of course, the crackpot idea would be that this was something that either the government was in on, and hence the idea that there was this inside job, or there may be the idea that to a lesser degree the government was involved in the sense that they had foreknowledge of the attack, rather, and that it was allowed to happen because that would be of military benefit. I don't know that I endorse either of those. In fact, I don't. I do think that there was intelligence available prior to 9/11 that indicated that there was going to be some sort of an attack. And frankly, if intelligence agencies had been more proactive, the attacks might have been prevented. But I'll tell you this, Caleb, I do think that there is a conspiracy, and I think that there is information that the government has withheld about 9/11. And let me be specific. Again, on the Middle Theory podcast, Chris McCollum and I dedicated an entire segment on a program, and I've written about this too, to a 27-page or so redaction. No. I think it was something more like 7,200 words. I don't know. That could have been 27 pages. Anyway, there was a large portion of a congressional inquiry that was eventually released, but there was a large portion in this congressional document that was redacted. Now, certain members of Congress are allowed to go and to read this redacted portion, but they have to literally go into like a secret, silent, you know, soundproof room in order to read this. And those who have read it, obviously they can't talk about what it says, but apparently the indications given, according to journalists who are following this, I being one of them, is that it strongly points to some sort of a Saudi connection with 9/11. The question is, if that is indeed what this, and this is not some sort of a conspiracy theory, this is pure fact, there was a redacted portion of this congressional document. No one can say with certainty that they know exactly what it says, but again, evidence based on what certain congressmen and women have said who have read the documents, there's only a handful of them that actually have. What it seems to point to, they refer to it as being embarrassing and something that we'd have to reconsider what we think we know about 9/11, but not necessarily in the sense that it points to there being some sort of an inside job. Apparently, the more specific details point to there being some sort of a connection with the Saudis. The question is, why would this be withheld from the American public? If it is being withheld from the American public, does that not actually constitute secret information that the government withholds from the American public about the greatest American terrorist attack on American soil? I mean, seriously. So I think sometimes the point here is that, you know, there are these wacko conspiracy theories that in the absence of a conclusive narrative, or maybe at very least in the absence of people seeking a conclusive narrative and really doing their homework and reading, I think that certain times people can easily put together a string of events that may not be an accurate depiction of reality. And yet, at the end of the day, though, that does not remove not just the possibility, but the reality that in an instance like 9/11, whether it be for national security purposes or whatever else, there was information, and there is still information being withheld from the public. Just like there is still information being withheld from the public with regard to the Kennedy assassination. There are World War II files that are still withheld from the public. There are probably UFO files, although I don't think that they offer conclusive proof that we're being visited by extraterrestrials, but I still don't doubt that there are probably files that government agencies have withheld that have to do with UFO phenomenon that are not made publicly available. And there are probably a range of reasons that are far more prosaic than most of us think that these are withheld, but they are still withheld. And the biggest problem is that in order to obtain that sort of information through Freedom of Information Act requests, Nick Redfern and I have talked about this at length on numerous occasions. You have to know what to look for. And if you try to file a Freedom of Information Act request, you have to be extremely specific with the information that you go looking for. Because if you don't know exactly what to look for and you are not very specific with the terms you provide, you're very likely not to get anything that you're looking for. People think that they can go to the FBI, for instance, and say, give me all your files on Bigfoot. You know? And the FBI may, you know, initiate a search. And let's just say that they've got documents deep down in there that don't say anything about Bigfoot, but there's a document that says a woman was kidnapped by a large feral humanoid creature, purportedly the Sasquatch of myth and legend. It abducted her and left her in a national park. She was found alive, but very frightened 3 days later. Let's say that such a document existed. Probably doesn't, but let's say it did. It doesn't say Bigfoot. It uses more ambiguous terms. Maybe it uses Sasquatch or refers to a feral humanoid or something like this. If you supply to the FBI with your FOIA request that you want all the documents on Bigfoot, you won't get that one. Now, let's say that there's a document that comes up and it's talking about a murder that occurred at a car show where the famous Bigfoot monster truck made an appearance. And they find the word that you asked for, Bigfoot, and you're supplied that document. And a lot of people have ended up very frustrated because they haven't been specific enough with the requests that they make. And the problem is that there are probably aspects of history and American government that are so secret that the key terms that you would need to know in order to obtain the information are unknown to the public, especially with regard to things like clandestine aviation programs and things that might relate to UFO phenomenon and the like. And if you don't know what to go looking for, you're going to have a damn hard time finding the truth about it. So there are levels of secrecy that are maintained by government. But again, I don't think that it's necessarily for nefarious purposes. Nick Redfern, again, has said this just as well. A lot of it has to do with need to know. A lot of it has to do with national security. A lot of it has to do with, get this, and this one will make a lot of people laugh, especially in lieu of the idea of the surveillance state in which we exist. But a lot of it has to do with the privacy of citizens. If you request a document about an individual and somebody, for instance, who is mentioned in that document is still alive and it might release private details about that individual, their life, or something pertaining to them, a lot of the time that sort of documentation won't be released by an agency like the FBI. I mean, there are a lot of reasons why. And then finally, of course, a lot of this stuff, as I've said, has to do with information that probably is so esoteric to the public that we wouldn't even know what to begin searching for in order to find it. Now, what does all that have to do with secrets and secret societies and conspiracy theories? In the absence of being able to obtain information, I think that it is very clear that people leap to the judgment that the government is intentionally withholding because they have something to hide, which in fact may or may not be the case. I think sometimes it is the case, being honest with you. And I always try to be honest, whether it makes people happy or whether they call me a lying scumbag, globalist, Illuminati mouthpiece, mind-molested meat puppet, all these things. You know, there are people who really do think that I'm just cheerleading for like the Illuminati right now, I'm sure. I'm trying to distill this to you as a researcher as coherently as I can and explain that, yes, there are things that are kept secret. At times, there are legitimate reasons. Sometimes there are not. And sometimes there's a lot of bureaucracy that really is more silly than anything as to why these things are kept from the public. With that 9/11 redaction, while I don't know that that's nefarious, I think that the American public has a right to know, especially when we look at the number of deaths that occurred in relation to 9/11, civilian deaths. I think that the American public has a right to know and why there are agencies that would withhold information. This is, as one famous commentator often says, on record. This is on record, and that information is being withheld from the public. Why? Do we have a right to know? Yeah, I think we do. And that, to me, is not a conspiracy theory. That actually, while we may theorize about what specifically the nature of the redacted information is, it is a fact that that information was withheld.
I will say it's interesting to me that the media finds it bizarre that conspiracy theories arise when the third building, World Trade Center number 7, was never really even mentioned in the official report.
I still wonder about that one, and there have been official explanations that have been provided. Again, what's strange is that the official 9/11 Commission report doesn't make much of that, just like the Warren Commission report didn't make much of Yuri Nisenko, the KGB spy who failed the polygraph test numerous times when it came to discussing whether or not Lee Harvey Oswald had indeed had something to do with the KGB while he had traveled to Russia. You know, again, I think maybe there is a question there, or two, or maybe a few more. We'll get into all that when we come back here on the Graylian Report. Stay with us. Micah Hanks, this is the Graylian Report, and you've locked in yet again as we discuss conspiracy theories on tonight's program. Part and partial to the discussion of conspiracy theories, Caleb, of course, are secret societies. And I've read a good bit about this. Now, later I want to talk about conspiracy-related deaths, but right now I've got a roundup of some of the top 10 secret societies best known. We'll go ahead and dive right into them. Of course, there's the Skull and Bones, which we had a classic image, a featurette sort of, that we used on the social media tonight that was promoting tonight's program that features a classic image of the Skull and Bones. Do you remember, Caleb, what the insignia of that organization is?
A skull and bones?
How did you know that? Oh, damn. He's good, folks. The Order of Skull and Bones, a Yale University society. By the way, Caleb, I'm on Yale's embargoed news mail list, and I never added myself. It's got to be a conspiracy.
Somebody's watching you.
Yeah, dude. Seriously, I never added myself. They, you know, Grayley and Daily News, we feature a lot of science. They send me all the sciencey stuff that they put out now. Yale.
What you don't know is that your mind is being mined, and yeah. they are training you to become the leader of the Illuminati one day.
That's right. What do you mean, training me?
Do you even hear what's coming out of your mouth, slave?
Kill him, I'm just trying to...
I'm being channeled by Tyler.
Yeah, right.
As I've been accused of.
Yes. Now, apparently Skull and Bones was founded in 1832. Membership is open to an elite few. You know the story, right? You're in your dorm, and apparently you'll hear a knock at the door.
Next thing you know, it's the cast of Eyes Wide Shut taking you down into a dungeon.
That's right. And then the members are brought in, and they meet every Thursday and Sunday in a building they call, appropriately, the Tomb. Now, the chief archivist at Yale University Library, Judy Schiff, says that the names of members were not kept secret until the 1970s, but that the rituals have always been. Both of the Bush presidents were members of the society while studying at Yale, and a number of other members have gone on to great fame and fortune. The society is surrounded by conspiracy theories, including the idea that essentially the, you might call it, birthplace of the CIA was rooted in this secret society. Hence this continuum between intelligence agencies and the formation of secret societies and their influence on intelligence agencies and government organizations. Now, the CIA released a statement in 2007, which coincided with a film that I saw twice in theaters called The Good Shepherd. Have you ever seen that, Caleb?
I have not, but I did see The Skulls.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Which was basically based on that.
Yeah. What about Goonies? No, that didn't have anything to do with it, did it?
Oh. I don't know. I think Sloth may be the mascot of the Illuminati.
Yeah. He is, yeah. Exactly. All this time, it wasn't a skull in that picture.
Well, I mean, if you look at his head, it's obviously a triangle reference.
I thought it was just Don DiCicco, right?
Donald R. DiCicco.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm sorry. That must have been his cousin. Well, anyway. You're eating hair! So the film, The Good Shepherd, kind of dramatized this involvement with the CIA, or the birth of the CIA, stemming out of the Yale Skull and Bones Secret Society. And according to a 2007 statement that the CIA itself released, they denied that the group was indeed an incubator for the CIA. The document is actually apparently available online. One of my very favorite secret societies, and the one that I've probably had the most dealings with, and this is true, and I'm not talking about the world's most secret society. Sadly, they will not be listed here. But the secret society I have had the most dealings with are the Freemasons, and I think most of us probably have. I'm sure that there are listeners, many of you out there, who are members of the Freemasons. I've had friends who are Masons for years. I've been invited not only to join the Freemasons on numerous occasions, but I've also been invited to, and I was not allowed to attend the actual Masonic rituals, but following a ritual, I was allowed as a performer. My dad and I, we were performing Irish music one night, and our friend, who was the master of the Biltmore Lodge, invited us to come in. That probably sounded kind of bad when I was saying, yes, I attended a Masonic ritual as a performer. No. We were friends with the Grand Master of the Lodge at the time, and he said, you know, I love the music that you and your dad do. And he said, why don't you guys come and do a little presentation for us? And we didn't just do Irish music. My dad, being a connoisseur of all the different mountain styles of banjo, we did a whole presentation about the different styles of music. And we performed right there in the Masonic Temple, and it was really interesting. And I remember some of the artwork was just incredible. I've also visited the Scottish Rite Temple here in town, where our friend Joshua P. Warren has a museum in the basement. And there's a lot of religious literature, as well as spiritualist literature, that is maintained in their library there. It's quite a good library. Let's see here. The Rosicrucians. This is another one that comes to mind. The Rosicrucian order is generally believed to have been the idea of a group of German Protestants in the 1600s, when a series of three documents were first published. The Fama Fraternatis Rosae Crucis Confessio Fraternatis and the Chemical Wedding of Christian Rosencrutz Anno in 1459. Of course, Rosicrucian being a reference to the Rosy Cross. I always love that name, the Rosicrucian. Current members of the Rosicrucian order claim that its origins are far more ancient, though, than those documents. The authors of the documents seem to strongly favor Lutheranism and include condemnations of the Catholic Church. Rosicrucianism probably had an influence on Masonry, and in fact, the 18th degree of Scottish Rite Masonry is called the Knight of the Rose Croix, or the Red Cross. The next on our list is one of interest to a lot of people out there who follow esoteric stuff. Ordo Templi Orientis, famous for Aleister Crowley's association with it, an organization that was originally modeled on Masonry just as well, I believe also as Eastern traditions, Hermeticism, a lot of things, I think, as well, under the leadership of the self-styled great beast Aleister Crowley, and it took on the principles of his religious system called Thelema. Thelema is based around a single law which famously reads, "Do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law. Love is the law. Love under the will." That last part you usually don't hear quoted in conjunction with the "do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law." Membership in the Ordo Templi Orientis is based upon degrees of initiation, and highly stylized rituals are used. They currently claim over 3,000 members worldwide, which really I think worldwide isn't all that wide-reaching. But that kind of leads us to the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn. Accordingly, their belief system is largely taken from Christian mysticism, Kabbalah, Hermeticism, and the religion of ancient Egypt, Freemasonry. Alchemy, which of course is the very term which lends itself to modern-day chemistry. If you are a chemist today, you probably work in an industrial field testing chemicals and, running procedures and things in laboratory. But in ancient times, you might have been trying to transmute base metals into gold. Theosophy, magic, and Renaissance writings also are instrumental in the Golden Dawn symbolism. One of its most famous adherents, I believe, have been William Butler Yeats as well as Aleister Crowley, the aforementioned with the Ordo Templi Orientis. Now, I'd mentioned earlier, in joking about spending so much time down here in our cave, the Knights Templar. And, of course, this idea that there had been a holy crusading knight that had guarded the Grail, as portrayed in the Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. And, Caleb, as far as I'm concerned, that was the last Indiana Jones film. I leave it at that. The Knights Templar, of course, there are a lot of stories about this. Members of the Masonic Knights Templar, for instance, do not claim a direct connection to the medieval group, but if I remember correctly, there is, I think, the Hereditary Order of the Knights Templar, I believe is the name of the organization. It's a essentially kind of a Masonic influenced group in England that claims to have direct ties back to the original Knights Templar. The Illuminati is next on our list, of course. The Illuminists of the Enlightenment era. This is probably called the most famous secret society today. It is, as I understand, of course, a real group that actually existed, but what is questionable is whether or not the Illuminati is still in operation today. Now, of course, a lot of the popular conspiracy theorists and talk show hosts and writers on this subject say without question and a resounding yes, the Illuminati does still exist. We know that they did at one time. Do they still exist under that name, or are there offshoots from the organization that have continued on in that tradition? What is it? I'm sorry, I was laughing at what Red Pill Junkie said. The fourth movie wasn't all that bad.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll say this really quickly, and then we'll come back to the Illuminati. And the fourth movie he's talking about is the Indiana Jones film. I would say that the fourth one I would rather watch than most films because it was an Indiana Jones film. And yes, it tied in a lot of the kind of popular ancient alien stuff. No, it wasn't all that bad, but among the Indiana Jones films, it was worse to me than Temple of Doom. The first one and the third one will always and forever remain my favorites. Anyhow. So the Illuminati, the conspiracy theory in relation to the Illuminati here is I think that they are still not only in active operation, but that they have incredible influence. In fact, they are really the puppeteers pulling the strings on all global affairs. Many people believe that the Illuminati is still operating and managing the main actions of governments worldwide, and it is believed that they wish to create a one-world government based on humanist and atheist principles. You know, again, Jack Ashcraft is still there in the chat room, and that's something I'd love to talk with him about. We'll do that in the coming weeks here on the Graylian Report, the idea that there is not only just an atheist agenda, but also this globalist agenda, you know, agenda. How much of that stems from organizations that may be continuations of groups like the Illuminati? Or, again, is the actual Illuminati still in operation? This might be as crackpot as I'm going to sound tonight, Caleb, but I might venture to guess that, yeah, probably some formation or distillation of what was once the famous Illuminists probably is still in operation. I would think that it's just too good to let go of. We've got the Bilderberg Group, of course, a highly influential group of intellectuals that get together and discuss world affairs. If you're an up-and-coming politician, you're likely to be invited to a Bilderberg Group meeting, rather. If you lose a subsequent election, you're probably not likely to be invited back. I met a young man named Keita when I went on the Ancient Alien cruise earlier this year, Caleb, and I had taken with me on the cruise as supplemental reading, even though I was discussing the giant skeletons debate, I had taken my handbook to secret societies, and I'd left it on the counter in my stateroom. And Keita, when I met him, he was the stateroom manager, and he came down. I think he was from Guinea. And he came down to me the first day. He said to me, he says, "Oh, you're Mr. Micah. Oh, I wanted to meet you." He says, "Do you know what your name means?" And, of course, the Hebraic, of course, root of my name. You, Caleb, are a lover of dogs.
And Count Chocula.
And
yes.
Count, yeah. And I am he who is like God.
Wow, thanks, Mom and Dad.
The lover of dogs and the Caleb, you know, if I am the son of man, then you are a son of man's best friend. But we are all sons of God, and that's what I mean by that. Not a literal reference to me being Jesus or something like that. That would be sacrilegious. But I think that that name and the idea of he who is like God, we should all, I think, try to be like that. And that's what Keita said to me. He said, "Do you know the meaning of your name?" And I said, "I do, sir." He says, he put his hand on my shoulder. He says, "Live it every day, brother. Live it every day." Well, a couple of days later, he would always want to stop and talk to me, and because he said, "I heard that you're giving a lecture on this cruise," and he wanted to know what I was lecturing about. And he said, "Brother, I saw the book that you had about secret societies." And he kept asking questions. I think he thought I was a member of a secret society. And Keita kept wanting to know, "What is it that you do? What is it? I want to hear you, what you talk about, brother." And so the last day, I felt kind of bad because I think he kind of wanted the book. I think he kind of wanted this book that had this really long passage in it that I'd left a bookmark in on the page about the Bilderbergs. And I thought maybe he thought I was a Bilderberg or something. I don't mean to be too suspicious, but I thought maybe if he thought I was a Bilderberg that I was going to leave an exceptionally good tip.
I will just say, if you suspect somebody of being in a secret society, maybe I wouldn't pin them for walking around with a book about secret societies. They would probably be a little bit more discreet than that.
Yeah, exactly. Well, the original meetings of the Bilderberg were initiated by several individuals. Joseph Rettinger, I believe, had been concerned about the growth of anti-Americanism in Western Europe. What was the famous head of the Bilderberg? His name is slipping my mind. He was the I cannot believe that'd be like forgetting my own middle name, which is okay. We'll come back to that too. But anyway, the Priory of Zion. After the publication of the Da Vinci Code by Dan Brown, this one got a lot of attention. It was, and get this, this is interesting. For those hoping to find and join the Priory, it is purportedly fictional. A hoax created in 1956 by a pretender to the French throne, Pierre Plantard. Letters in existence dating back to the 60s written by Plantard apparently confirmed that there were, I believe, he and two other individuals engaging in an out-and-out confidence trick describing schemes on how to combat criticisms of their various allegations and how they would make up new allegations to try and keep the whole thing going. Despite this, many people still continue to believe that the Priory exists and functions to this day. Yet again, though, I should point out that if that is indeed accurate, yet again, the appeal of conspiracy theories. When you append to something that it is secret, that makes it so much more juicy and so much more, you know, accessible to the minds of individuals who want to feel that they are a part of something maybe that is a little deeper or a little further beyond the norm. And finally, Opus Dei, an organization of the Catholic Church that emphasizes the Catholic belief that everyone is called to holiness and that ordinary life is a path to sanctity. I have to point out that in his book, The United States of Conspiracy that Jesse Walker of Reason Magazine wrote, Caleb. He points out that there are secret societies that are recognized not for being, you know, vile or evil or trying to control the world with nefarious purposes. I think he refers to it in the book as a conspiracy of light, which involves secret societies that actually do good in the world. Again, I would say, you know, look at the Freemasons. You know, in many instances, you can say what you want to about the history and the origins of the group, but, you know, most people I know who are Freemasons, you know, they aren't engaging in blood rites and rituals and things like that, and they aren't sacrificing chickens and snakes and stuff. In fact, they're, if anything, involved in community outreach, and they're often in very civic-minded individuals who donate money and raise money for charities and things like that. I know that bursts everybody's conspiratorial bubbles, but, you know, I've never known really a bad Mason. But when we come back, if you really want to get dark, even darker than the Illuminati, which is kind of, well, funny because Illuminati entails illumination, we'll look at some of the conspiracies associated with the deaths of celebrities. Some of these even keep me wondering. We'll look at that when we come back here on the Grayling Report. From the dark heart of Appalachia, it is the Grayling Report, and I'm your host, Micah Hanks, wrestling with the reckoning of the secrets among us and the members of those clandestine organizations that withhold the truth and light from the masses. Now, this evening, we have been looking seriously at conspiracy theories because I don't think that this is a subject that is relegated solely to the lunatic fringe, although I think that the reality of this is often a more mixed bag than the way that the media portrays it as being solely the kind of things that crackpots and idiots would find favor in. You know, and I hate that because, I mean, you see the same thing with UFOs. I know I've said it so many times in the past, but Stephen Hawking talking about, you know, I leave UFOs out of my discussion about alien life because if aliens had actually visited Earth, why would they only present themselves to cranks and weirdos. I mean, that's such a stupid statement. And unfortunately, the media does the exact same thing in looking at conspiracies and secret societies as being solely the interests of whack jobs. That is not the case. Anybody who actually spends time studying this stuff should know that. And I've actually got a book here titled The Rough Guide to Conspiracy Theories. I've got a stack of other books over here, some rather scholarly books. I actually own some textbooks that are extremely down on the idea of conspiracies, but they're textbooks nonetheless and extremely authoritative in some of the sourced material that went into their authorship. I own a lot of books about this, and I'm truly fascinated with the way that conspiracies influence culture and society. And yet again, I think that there is indeed a lot of gray area, and I'm not just trying to pander to both sides. Again, this is the whole reason why when we decided to call that show Middle Theory, we called it that. This is the whole reason that I talk about, you know, open-minded skepticism and middle-of-the-road skepticism on this program. I'm really suspicious of anybody who comes along. Unfortunately, I think at times Brian Dunning and certain other, you know, popular skeptics do this. They come along and they can cook up an explanation for anything that you throw at them. And when every explanation that they give you invariably falls on the side of skepticism, modern skeptical movement skepticism, I become skeptical of that skepticism. when Brian Dunning, I'd love to have a talk with him about, for instance, you know, the redactions from the congressional report on 9/11 and the Saudi connection. He probably doesn't know anything about it. And if he does, sadly, he probably does what a lot of skeptics do and chooses not to write about it. And I've read a lot of Brian's writing on everything from the Brown Mountain Alliance to MK Ultra. I actually liked his article on MK Ultra, and his entire thesis was there was a lot of bad stuff that went on. The documents, in large part, were destroyed. We'll probably never know what was going on, but that doesn't necessarily provide evidence that it's still going on today. And I agree with that position just as well. But I don't agree with everything he says. And I am, again, I'm wary of anybody who thinks that they can just come up with a belief-oriented or a skeptical argument in all cases that will refute 100% of the time the argument of their, whatever position we're discussing, their contractors. Or, I'm sorry, their detractors, not contractors. Nobody contracted Brian Dunning to write about this. So, but that said, you know, we've got to be careful and not allow our ideological biases to steer the argument that we end up supporting. And that's the key here. We have to be very careful about doing that. So I want to get to this top 10 list of conspiracy deaths. Some of these are interesting. Some of these are really interesting. Some of these are clearly conspiracy theories just as well. I'll leave it up to you to determine which ones are more fact and which are more fiction. Some of them I might just tell you outright. My number one, actually, Caleb, I've got a top 10 list here. I know you got some, and I want you to interject just as well as I'm going down through these, because there were some that I left off. The first one is a musician. And it is, you want to see?
Can I guess now?
Yeah, you want to see if you can guess who it is?
Elvis?
What? No, not
Come
this one.
Come on!
No, but I will tell you this. Since you guessed Elvis, I will say that Elvis appears later on my list, much later. I'm fascinated with the Elvis death conspiracies. But no, the first one actually is Mozart. Now, the story about Mozart is somewhat twofold. Toward the end of his life, Mozart actually believed that he had perhaps been poisoned, which I find extremely interesting. Not only did he think that he might have been poisoned, he had actually been quoted saying things. For instance, on the morning that he died, which was December 5th, 1791, his wife's sister Sophie recalled that he joked that the requiem he had been writing was for himself. He purportedly then vomited in a brown ark and died 2 hours later. His last conscious act was apparently to express with his mouth the drum passages of the Requiem, which he had joked had been written for himself, because he said he knew he had been poisoned. But there's another idea, and apparently it dates back to, I think it actually goes back to 1791, when a journalist named Friedrich Rochlitz had written that a carriage had drawn up and a stranger was announced, a somewhat aging, serious, imposing man of a very respectable appearance. Well, this so-called gray stranger apparently was, according to this popular legend dating back to the late 1790s, or the early 1790s, late 1700s, this gray stranger had apparently been the very man who had commissioned to Mozart to write this requiem. And it was this man, purportedly, who had been involved in hassling about Mozart over the authorship of this that led to his death. Again, some rather strange stories, but at very least, Mozart, up until the time of his death, seemed to believe that he had indeed been poisoned. Number 9 on this top 10 list that I've compiled is Marilyn Monroe. And I find her story extremely interesting because, of course, there has always, Caleb, been this idea that the Kennedys might have been involved. Why? Because, of course, Marilyn Monroe was probably involved with JFK, who also appears later on this list. I'll let you guess which one on a scale 1 to 10 he ranks. Now, Marilyn Monroe, interestingly, in the conspiracy theories relating to her death, there's not only the Kennedy connection, but there's also a UFO connection. And some of you who are familiar with the whole Majestic 12 affair probably already know where I'm going with this. There is a paragraph that was featured in a transcript of a purported phone tap conversation between a journalist friend and, this was a journalist who was friends with Howard Rothberg. The paragraph in this purported document reads, "Rothberg indicated in so many words that Marilyn Monroe had secrets to tell, no doubt arising from her trysts with the president and the attorney general. One such secret mentions the visit by the president at a secret air base for the purpose of inspecting things from outer space. Kilgagan replied that she knew what might be the source of the visit. And in the mid-50s, Kilgallen learned, I think I said Kilgagan the first time, but Kilgallen, this is of course reference the journalist Dorothy Kilgallen. Kilgallen learned of a secret effort by U.S. and U.K. governments to identify the origins of the story. It may have come from the New Mexico story in the late 40s, obviously a reference to Roswell. Kilgallen said that if the story is true, it would cause terrible embarrassment for Jack and his plans to have NASA put men on the moon. That, of course, is a reference to JFK and a joint space program with the Russians, which would later, of course, lead to the hope to, well, get men on the moon, which we apparently did by 1969, unless you purport, or rather that you prescribe to the conspiracy theory that, well, we did never go to the moon. Kendall, what do you think about that, by the way? Do you think that it's possible we actually didn't go to the moon at all?
I think it happened.
You think that it happened, that there was actually a conspiracy?
No, I think it happened that we actually went to the moon.
Are you engaging in double news speak right now?
I am.
You don't really believe that we went to the moon, do you?
Huh?
You don't believe we went to the moon?
I believe we went to the moon.
I'm just kidding. I believe we went to the moon, too. Oh, goodness. Number seven on my list here. I skipped over one. I'm sorry. Number eight was actually Malcolm X. Now, this is pretty interesting to me. The whole thing about Malcolm X, of course, was that apparently there were three individuals who had acted in carrying out his death. As I understand, there is some belief that the FBI may have been involved, but apparently, get this, I think it was Malcolm X's own daughter who had said, I know that members of the nation were involved in the assassination of Malcolm X, but no, I'm sorry, that's the wrong statement here. Here we go. She says, my father was not killed from a grassy knoll, but she went on to say that she still believed that the FBI had somehow been involved, even if it was a young black man who shot him. Now, as I understand, the FBI still holds a number of documents, possibly some 45,000, pertaining to the death of Malcolm X. That's pretty interesting just as well. Now, of course, there's the Fidel Castro thing, and this is really bizarre. I've even heard Jacques Vallée talk about this. The FBI had been extremely interested. Well, actually, I should say more so probably the CIA had been extremely interested in trying to infiltrate Cuba back in the 60s. This is widely known, but you know, one of the things we were laughing about, Caleb, among the among the PSYOP strategies and things that were being proposed was to distribute leaflets that showed a fat, overfed, essentially a gluttonous Castro that would infuriate the communists so much because they would see that he was not leading this example, you know, this communist example, and that he was actually sitting up there and he was, you know, treating himself like a king. And this is one of the ideas about, and this is the thing, of course, you know, with regard to Castro, is that in the last few years, you may remember that, of course, there were these reports of his death, and then it turned out he wasn't actually dead, you know, and it went back and forth for some time, you know, about Castro. That has less to do with his actual death in the 1960s as it did plots to try and take him out and, of course, to subversively control the populace in Cuba utilizing PSYOPs and the like. And I thought it was funny that they would use images of Castro, well-fed, resembling the Buddha, to try and infuriate the public.
Buddha Castro.
Now, the next one on my list, number six, yet again, you know, an actual assassination. Robert Kennedy. Robert Kennedy being shot by Sirhan Sirhan. The strangest thing about that one, of course, being that Sirhan Sirhan had said that he had no, after the trial, had no recollection of what had actually happened. And there had actually been psychologists who had said, yeah, it seems likely that maybe some sort of brainwashing or mind control could actually have been employed in relation to this. Isn't that bizarre? And of course, just a few years after the assassination of his older brother, JFK. Next on the list is Princess Diana. The conspiracy theories involving this one are strange indeed. Of course, there's the general idea that the paparazzi had been chasing them and it led to a terrible accident, but then there was the idea that there were a couple of MI6 agents that had apparently been staying at the hotel and that they may have been involved, and the entire thing could have been some sort of a bizarre assassination. Indeed, that's pretty strange. Dr. Martin Luther King. Now, this is where we get around to something that we mentioned a bit earlier in the program, and that has to do with an email that was sent to me by Mark Brady. You remember when Mark brought up the United States House Select Committee on Assassinations? And this, of course, did not deal solely with the Kennedy assassination. In fact, the United States House Committee on Assassinations also, Select Committee, I'm sorry, also dealt with the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr. just as well. And they did come to the conclusion that there may have been a conspiracy involving this. Specifically, this is apparently what was said. Of the King assassination, the committee concluded in its report that while King was killed by one rifle shot from the suspected gunman, James Earl Ray, they said that there was a likelihood that it was still the result of a conspiracy. In other words, by definition, two or more individuals conspiring a plot that usually is enacted to the detriment of another individual, in this instance, Dr. King. And furthermore, that no U.S. government agency was a part of this conspiracy, although Ray had probably been acting out a conspiracy with the help of others. Again, that is not necessarily some sort of a wide-reaching government plot to take out this man, although there were a number of documents kept, I believe, by the FBI with regard to Dr. King, some of them apparently aimed at trying to exploit, for instance, Dr. King's fancy for women and things like this. Whether or not the government was involved, though, I think that it's important to point out that, yes, you can acknowledge that there was probably a conspiracy here, and that that isn't necessarily something that is completely lunatic fringe to say so, that James Earl Ray had probably been influenced by others in regard to this. Now, Frank Olson is a truly disturbing case, and I want to refer to this book here that I've mentioned, the Rough Guide to Conspiracies in relation to this one. Frank Olson is a truly disturbing story. Some of you will probably remember this. Of course, this has a lot of ties to MK Ultra itself, mind control, and all this. On November 28, 1953, U.S. Army scientist Dr. Frank Olson hurtled through the window of his 10th floor room in New York's Hotel Statler and plummeted to his death. According to the inquest, it was suicide, but Richard Lashbrook, a CIA colleague who was with Olson at the time, testified that he had been unable to stop Olson from killing himself. The conspiracy theory here, of course, is that, essentially, this may have been part of some sort of a CIA operation in which Olson possibly, in likelihood, without his prior knowledge, was administered LSD, and he very well may have been undergoing a horrific hallucination at the time that he took his own life. Now, this is truly disturbing. I remember, Caleb, you may have even seen this too. Back in the day, there was an Unsolved Mysteries episode that was done about Frank Olson. And interestingly, Nick Redfern has written a good bit about Frank Olson just as well. And the fact that when this took place, again, this was November 28th, 1953. You know, this was, of course, at the outset of the MK Ultra thing. But Nick kind of ties in some of the mind control stuff with everything from alien abductions to, of course, that most famous abduction we've discussed, the Hickson and Parker abduction. And he supposes that it very well could have been very similar technologies to what led to the death of Frank Olson that could have been affecting some of the people who claimed that they were being abducted by aliens. I mean, what short of an actual alien abduction could account for such a strange and vivid hallucinatory experience as that purported by abductees, who sometimes also state that they feel that it is less a physical experience as it is maybe a spiritual kind of a, almost disembodied kind of a thing. Not that all abductees say that. Some do. Since we're running out of time, I'll go ahead and wrap it up here. Number two, Caleb, Elvis Presley, the Elvis death conspiracy, which kind of ties in a little in a weird way with Andy Kaufman, because Andy Kaufman, of course, who it has also been purported by none less than Andy's own brother, that Andy may still be alive today. Well, he was, of course, well known for his Elvis impersonations. And there have been very serious, I remember there was a serious primetime documentary when I was a kid that was aired that was asking, is Elvis Aaron Presley still alive? Did he fake his own death, just like Dave Chappelle was talking about? Do you think Elvis faked his own death, Caleb?
If he did, he's in a rest home, and he's fighting mummies.
There you go. Bubba Hotep, baby. And then, of course, number one, very little needs to be said about this one. The mother of all conspiracy theories. The Kennedy assassination. The one that I've said in the past, of course, is what I regard as being responsible for the death of American innocence. That instance, and the fact that an American president was shot, the way in which he died, and of course the circumstances involving the inquest into the cause of his death, whether or not there was a conspiracy carried out, that led to, I think, the birth of the modern conspiracy theory. And forever after, Americans have continued to question the official narrative, because when holes appear to be there, people begin to get suspicious. And the first people that they point the finger to are, of course, government agencies and organizations which they hold may have been involved. And again, I think that there's probably a little more dirt than most in the mainstream are willing to say about the Kennedy assassination just as well. But we've discussed that before. Perhaps we'll discuss it again at a later time, but we'll save that for a future edition of the program. We hope you've enjoyed our inquest this evening into the nature of conspiracy theories in America. On the Mouth of the South, and on behalf of all of us here at Graylian International, Matthew Oakley, Chris Hayes, Caleb Hanks, Tyler Pittman, Dick Oakley, John Anderson, and yours truly, Micah Hanks, the Mouth of the South. We bid you adieu, friends, and as always, stay strange. We'll talk to you next week.
Been listening to the Graylian Report with Micah Hanks. Any rebroadcast or duplication of this program or program content without express written permission is strictly prohibited. The Graylian Report, in direct cooperation with the internet website graylianreport.com.